Welcome back, everybody, to this week's episode of the Box Out Boys. This is, I believe, our ninth episode. Maybe, maybe not. Either way, if you've listened to them all, thank you. We appreciate you. And welcome back to the landscape of college basketball. You know, what's going on in sports right now? We got the Super Bowl coming up. There was college football. You know, basically football. All these things you love. You know, you might not be happy with the Super Bowl. Chiefs 49ers rematch, that doesn't excite most people unless you're a diehard fan of the NFL or you really like those teams. College football, sure, we had Washington get in. We had Michigan win the playoffs. A little more exciting, but those are boring sports. I'm going to say it right now. What's exciting is college basketball. That's what's exciting. Where we have top 10 teams losing to unranked teams every week, every day. Not every day. You know what I mean. You get the picture. College basketball is exciting. I'd say right now, at this time, it's probably the most exciting sport to watch. So thanks for tuning in with us. What are you doing if you're not watching college basketball? Get the games on. Here we go. We're coming in after another exciting week. Say it every week because it's true. And we are joined by a special guest, our first special guest, zoom, 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 Aaron Fox, our Big 12 Kansas resident fan. It's a mouthful. Aaron, how are you doing? We are happy to have you on. He's one of my best friends. I'm very excited to talk some college basketball with you, man.
Yeah, man, I'm doing good. Excited to be here. Long-time listener, first-time caller, you know?
Oh, right on. I love to hear that. Love to hear people listening to the pod.
It's very refreshing. I loved Aaron's intro that he just got there. I don't know. I've never gotten anything like that from you.
I am joined by my fellow co-host, Spencer Clark, another best friend. Well, much love to all.
Now it feels like pity. But yes, Aaron, besides the fact that you're a Kansas fan and your views may be skewed a little bit, we're really excited to hear about what you have to say tonight. And I know our fans are as well. Berg, like you said, back here for our 22nd episode. So thank you, everyone that's been with us from the start. But let's get right into it. People want to talk.
Yeah, let's get right into it.
Iowa State, Kansas, Hilton Coliseum on Saturday. Initial thoughts, both of you?
I'll start. Initial thoughts. Iowa State, Kansas, it's an anticipated matchup every year. I don't know how much it is for Kansas fans. I think I have an idea, but I know this is one right away. You see Kansas coming in. Iowa State fans circle this game. You know it's going to be a big one because Kansas typically dominates the Big 12. So you know it's going to be one of your biggest games you're playing all season. You want to see them lose because of how much success they had. And you want to be the team that dethrones them. So as Iowa State fans, it's one we really get up for. We like to believe that Hilton's a tough place to play at. And so when the game gets going, you know, anything's possible, regardless of the ranking on either side. It's typically a lot higher on the Kansas side. But from this game, you know, I thought we would win because our home metrics, just looking at the metrics, we play a lot better at home. Iowa State plays a lot better at home this season. And it just kind of felt like the year we do it. I don't know if it got done last year. So I felt really good going into the game, knew it would be a nail biter, and it was right till the end. But Aaron, what were your thoughts as a Kansas fan going into the game just in general? I mean, yep. How did you feel?
So in general, first thing I want to touch on, you mentioned that Iowa State regularly gets up for this game, Iowa State fans across the board. I would say that is equally true for Kansas. You know, I think outside of whoever is a top 10 team in the Big 12 each year, Iowa State is, regardless of their rank, the team that Kansas fans and Kansas basketball knows to, you know, not be shy about and understand what's about to happen one way or the other. Because there have been years Iowa State might not have been the best, that those games are always nail biters for the most part. And if they're not, it's like a 15-point win at home by either team. But then my gut reaction going into that game was I thought we were going to lose. But I thought that after that first about 15 minutes of the first half, I kind of started feeling like good. You know, I thought we offensively were doing everything we wanted to, just some of the shots weren't falling. And I felt like Iowa State was hitting a lot of shots that they haven't been lately. which is totally fine. I think that was kind of a theme for the game. Not to say that Iowa State can't score the ball from three, but they haven't been, right? And so, yeah, you know, right, it was really that 4-point swing right before half that I was like, ah, fuck, man. He just went from a 1-point lead with a minute 15 to go, and now we're down 4 going into the half after Momkilovich made that 3. But then in the second half, it was like, you know, we could have lost by 20 just as easily as we lost by, what, 4? The way Iowa State was shooting, and especially the late shot clock shots that were falling for them, it was one of those games that I was watching, and I was just – I was impressed by Kansas for being in it, because it felt like one of those games that could have easily been a 20-point ass beating in Hilton, you know. So I thought KU played well, all things considered. I was happy with what they showed.
Yeah, coming from the opposite side of that, as an Iowa State watching from the Iowa State side, it felt like we just couldn't get away. We couldn't just open it up and. Like, we'd be up 12 and shoot 3 and miss it, and then Kansas come down and can one. So it felt like that. Hilton, I think this might be the best Hilton Coliseum has been in a long, long time. Maybe ever. And I don't really know why that is. But, like, there's something different around Hilton this year.
No, definitely this year, because I know under Otzelberger, like, I've said it before, you wouldn't know. I think it's not a stat you'd hone in, but I don't think they played well as they normally have under other coaches. Like, I think Steve Prohm for a while had a better at home record just overall than Otzelberger, which is terrifying to think about because the Steve Prohm era was absolutely garbage. And so when I learned that Otzelberger under his coaching, we had not been doing well at home, I was really concerned about that, but weirdly that's something that was highlighted after the fact, started getting highlighted this year, and we've kind of turned it on at home. I think we're undefeated at home this year. One of the highest, probably the highest winning margin in college basketball right now. A lot of that is due to an easy non-conference schedule where we just beat the shit out of teams that had no business being in a game with us. But you're right, the resurgence of Hilton is back. We really appreciate that.
It feels like the crowd is gritty. Like, we play a grittier style of basketball, and it feels like the crowd almost wants to be grittier, too. Like, some of those old guys in the front row to Jerome Tang last week, I think they would have wholeheartedly got down there and fought him man-to-man. Like, almost like you walk in there, and the fans just want to beat the fuck out of someone. Just because our team's getting stops, forcing turnovers, and sometimes that just makes you want to beat the fuck out of someone, like a junkyard dog.
I couldn't tell if that was a good look or a bad look, like outside in, because there's that, not iconic, but when I think about the K-State game earlier this week, there's that fan that did like the boo-hoo, like 45-year-old man, like doing a boo-hoo crying face to K-State's head coach. I went back and forth if I thought it was awesome or not, but I don't know. Maybe not the best look, in my opinion. Awesome. I love that he's there for it, but yeah.
I think it's certainly it's a look, you know. It's a look, but you know, and a shorter fanatic for a reason.
Right.
And some of my favorite takes, because I think KU and Iowa State kind of have, for the most part, online mutual respect for one another. And some of my favorite takes from KU Twitter heads was, we need our old people to be more like Ames' old people. Like, you go into Hilton, like, yeah, the student section's going to be good. But the difference half the time is you got these 45-year-old dudes and men, women, children. I guess not children if they're 45, but just out of their
somebody's child. Mind. Like, somebody's child.
Yeah, I suppose you're right, yeah. Just out of their mind, and I think that's the responsibility of the fan. You know, you're going to this game, and I think at a certain point, you sit at a basketball game, you can't be telling yourself, "Oh, I'm 45, I gotta act my age." You're like, you live there, you're like, you be there, you be present, and you fucking fulfill your duty.
Dude, we got the geriatric crowd going fucking nuts in there.
Yeah,
I think college sports. The best thing about college sports is everybody's a fan because most people have some kind of monetary value tied up in that team. So you feel like you're more of a part of it. And it just makes people so fucking deranged.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's the best thing in the world. Like, sometimes it goes too far. Like, sometimes people will send people death threats and stuff. And those are passionate fucking fans. Those are guys you want to drink a beer with and watch the game. But you don't want to be seen with them outside of that.
No, I agree. I like that take. I like that take because when you're at the game like that and you know, that old guy, older guy, he's not that old. He looked good for his age. But the older guy I'm referencing doing the sobbing, crying tear face to the K-State bench, basically, probably directly at Tang. But just the fact that he gets to go there and go back to his youth a little bit. I don't know. Maybe he went to Iowa State. You know, maybe that's what he was doing back in the day. I didn't see any kids with him. I think he was just a solo man, maybe dad there. And so he just gets to have some fun with it. I guess I really do like that. Initially didn't, you know, I don't want to come off as a sour fan base. I don't think we were, but that's what I was looking out for.
I think we're getting closer and closer to it. And I think people are starting to be okay with it. It feels like we're the bad boys of the Big 12.
Does it?
It kind of starting to feel like that. People don't like us.
Are known, you know, just for generally being unpleasant to not like me, you know, me to you, but or anything like that. But
when you know, they're it's, just it's yeah, it's hostile. When I was exactly. 12, when I was 12 or 13, I went there and stayed with my sister. We went to a Michigan game, and I sat in the student section and chanted "Fuck Mitch McGarry" for 2 minutes. People were watching at home, and my parents could hear the crowd chanting "Fuck Mitch McGarry."
Back in the day, when weren't bleeping that out either, they were letting that one roll.
It used to be like a faux pas, like "Oh my God, this school's doing it." Now it's like half the team in college taking a page out of Iowa State's book, you know.
And it's a bummer that we don't see more of it because schools are still doing fucked up shit. Like, who chanted Northwestern? Shannon Jr. No means no.
Yeah.
What a church.
I think they also chanted other words as well, amongst many other things. So, rivalries, whatever, chants at college arenas, those are still alive and well. The students are still chanting whatever the hell they want to. It can be brutal. I thought the Terrence Shannon was absolutely hilarious. It looks like Illinois looked past it pretty quickly. They might have even walked away with the win there too. So, I mean, they got the last laugh. But you like to know that there's still that fire inside where you can go on the court, say what you want to say. And then, I mean, once it's done, it's done. You know, I don't think you carry that energy off the court. But right. In the moment, I mean, we're just two fan bases going at it right now. We want to beat you. Will it get a little carried away with some of the chance? For sure. But I think that's part of the history of college basketball and college sports, for better or worse. I, for one, think better. I find it's – where else can you do that, you know? Where, like, let's compare it to comedians, you know, getting up on there. They're going to make a joke, say whatever they want. I feel like off stage, it might be a little different story. It's the same thing with college basketball. Mm-hmm. You get your stage there. You get to say what you want, and then you walk off. I'm sure you can still say it to your fan base, but, you know, once the game is over, you kind of leave it at that. And so I think it's a good place to exercise the demons and everybody to just get those competitive juices flowing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Berg, circling back on that, and I'm curious because I know you're maybe his biggest fan in the country. How did you feel about the Terrence Shannon Jr. chants? Were you offended personally?
No, I feel like I made my point clear. I'm all for the students chanting what they want. You know, he's a high-profile player, potentially one of the best in the nation, depending who you ask. And, you know, I think anything thrown his way is fair game at this point. I'm sure Terrence Shannon might have a different answer. But, dude, again, for the game, you know, I think you can say those things. I think you can cross a line, of course, but I think they might have teetered it pretty well.
I would argue that that's close to that line.
It's very close to the line. I think that teetered. Use the word teetered. I think they were very close, but ultimately, I'm okay with it.
Since it got brought up, apparently the whole Terrence Shannon, that whatever incident happened in Lawrence during the AU Illinois football game,
it all comes back to KU.
According to KU insiders, and I, you know. It's just hearsay that I'm repeating. So apparently the person throwing the allegations around has done this like 3 or 4 times. That's all I will say. I don't know. I don't have any details.
We're not going to touch that.
I don't have any details beyond that. But like Bill Self was helping, like, you know, I don't know if that's good or bad, but
was helping Terrence Shannon or the Illinois University, I guess.
On his behalf when obviously he wasn't there until he turned himself in, kind of stuff. I don't know. It obviously a shit show, but.
And from what I've heard too, because I didn't learn my lesson last week, I guess, the story just sounds sketchy from the other side, from the non-Terrence Shannon Jr. side. It doesn't really add up, but I think a lot of the stories that come out like this, you really don't have the answers until the end. Sometimes you really never get the answers. So, I mean, it's an awful situation. Obviously, if he's guilty, we don't stand with him. If he's not guilty, it's still going to be a stain that taints his career, I guess, going his life forever. So tough situation, but we're here to share our thoughts on it. Getting back to we talked about Iowa State and Kansas. You know, Iowa State, we've said they get up for KU. You admitted KU also gets up for Iowa State. There's some rich history there. But then are there any other – is there another higher Big 12 team that Kansas gets up a little more for, or I guess is comparable to the Iowa State thing where, you know, even on a down year, this is a team we're going to have to bring our best to. For example, I was reading, going through the Reddit and saw Oklahoma State is a big one for KU fans. They did, honestly, the KU fans I was reading did not even touch on Iowa State, was a little offended. But looking at the history, I guess Oklahoma State might have KU's number a little too. Might be West Virginia. I don't know. I guess I'm just wondering your perspective on that.
So yes and no to both those. Both of those teams were kind of like a period where it seemed like they had our number. I think I can't pull it off the top of my head, but I think Self started like 3-6 on the road at Oklahoma State in his career at KU, something like that. You know, like most of the away losses that we'd had year over year were to like Oklahoma State, West Virginia, and Iowa State. But the one reason I kind of give more kudos to Iowa State is because obviously they had that terrible fucking team and a couple bad years there in the middle where Hilton might not have been as popping as typical, but you know, like the last 3-4 years, Oklahoma State, I think we've beat 3 straight years on the road. West Virginia, we obviously lost this year, but I think had won the 2 prior. Whereas Iowa State, it's just, you never know. Like, I guess a team comparable to Iowa State in the sense that every team kind of gets up for Kansas. That's one thing I've learned growing up. It's just, you never know, I suppose. Like, any team can have their best game. But I guess, yeah, Oklahoma State would probably be the next closest fit outside of, like, K-State. But they're kind of our rival, so I don't know that counts.
That one's a given.
Yeah, Oklahoma State. I mean, they had Marcus Smart for those years, and God, who's that shooter?
Bill Forte.
Oh my God, dude, and that guy never left.
Yeah, so
is he still on the team?
Like 6 year.
Has somebody checked?
He's might
gone. Finally.
Yeah, he's got like gone. Got an alter ego now, but he's replaying his 4 years under a pseudonym.
I feel like he's still there. Somewhere, yeah. Somehow, still on the team. Maybe even just on the bench coaching assistant. But
there's a lore of white guys from the Big 12 that would just put a dagger in your team. Phil Forte might be the president of that team.
He's the first one that comes to mind.
He's
for
up
sure.
there. What, Dean Wade from K-State is on that team.
Sure. Dean Wade's still kicking around.
Who was the
around
Baylor guy? Matthew Meyer?
Matthew Meyer was there for a while.
But he was a stretch.
Are we talking about Brady Heslip? Yes.
Yeah. That's who I'm thinking of. Yeah.
That's a throwback name. Dude, that was probably one of Baylor's like first cold kids they had, honestly. And he was just happened to be a pure white shooter.
Just dominant.
White pure shooter. Let's say it that way.
Yeah. I feel like every team needs one.
Not the first white pure shooter we've heard of this year.
What?
Hey.
Not the first white pure shooter we've heard of this year.
Hey, well, probably not.
About it.
I don't know what that means, but going on to that point though, you guys are right. I mean, you got, let's just throw Furphy out there right now. You got Johnny Furphy kind of being a cold white shooter for KU. Dalton Knecht at Tennessee, cold ass white boy can ball. Cam Spencer at UConn, that man's like shooting over 40%. And I think the list goes on, but I mean, those are just three of, honestly, some of the, okay, we can't all put them together. Those are three cold players right there. Those are three players that are.
Milan, baby. You forgot about Mommy.
Yeah.
Oh, true. Dude, he's like the catalyst of Iowa State's team. So I think that's what, yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say that Furphy versus Mumkilovich matchup I loved. They both had their all game, but I think it was pretty net. It was like net zero all in all.
It was, but I mean, that was like Australia versus wherever the hell Milan's Eastern from.
Europe.
Yeah, so, Eastern Europe. So it wasn't even two white guys, or it wasn't even two American white guys coming at it. We got Australia versus Eastern Europe. It's probably from Serbia somewhere. I think that's fair to say. I feel pretty like 90% accurate with saying that. But let's, all right, Clark, Iowa State.
Talk to me.
We're about midway through the conference, pretty midway, I'd say, through our conference slate, through the conference schedule of the Big 12. Who are some of the – what are your thoughts on Iowa State as a team? You know, who are the guys you like the best? What are some areas you don't like? Any overperforming, underperforming? I guess what I'm asking is state of Iowa State, how they've done now, and then looking forward.
My thoughts on the team are, I was looking up Final Four tickets.
Oh, okay.
I think, and I'm about as unhinged of an Iowa State fan as you'll find. I recognize that. I own that. This team, our biggest question mark all year was, can we score?
Yeah.
Score in a half court. Because we're a transition team. We get out and run, and that's where we get the server points. When Curtis Jones and Tayshaun Gilbert came here, we were promised three-pointers. We were promised lights-out shooting. And up until Saturday, we had seen in spurts, but hadn't seen it all come together. And I feel like it came together Saturday. And I feel like we're going to continue to see it. And I think this might be, top to bottom, the best all-around Clones team we've had since probably Hoiberg, if not before Hoiberg.
Oh, yeah. Since Hoiberg era.
I mean, and the thing about the Hoiberg era was, if we were going to win, we were going to win because we scored 90, because those teams couldn't fucking defend. Not a chance in hell. This team can defend. Well, I feel like we can win games like we did 75-72, or we can win games 61-53. Like, this team can win in multiple ways, which is what you need. And that's what I think of it. I don't know. What was your biggest takeaway?
I guess right now, if I'm just spewing my thoughts out, I think Milan Mumchili is just an absolute game changer for our team. He brings a kind of like pure shooting as a freshman that I don't think Iowa State has, I almost want to say ever really experienced, because, I mean, nobody comes to mind right now. I mean, Niang maybe was the quickest to adapt. Sure, but even then, Milan's kind of that guy. You can, like, Iowa State can more comfortably play a spread five than they've ever been able to, I think, right now. Everybody's able to ball handle for the most part, depending on their lineup, but they can get five guards in there, and then I think everybody, you can basically, you know, put the ball in whoever's hands.
I don't want the ball in Bob Jones' hands.
No, we would not play stretch five with Robert Jones. Although I would put him as like, honestly, one of our most valuable players. I came into this season absolutely hating Robert Jones. Just what an overhyped piece of, you know, what are you doing out there?
Right.
Because he comes in the past seasons and he's played small minutes. He's getting more playing time this season. And there's a reason why, because I don't know what he did during the off season, but he just decided his fifth year was going to be his best year. It sounds normal when you say it out loud. It sounds like, okay, obviously. But he was, in my opinion, he was not putting – it was like, maybe don't even put him on the floor in the past couple seasons. He'll come in, turn it over, he'll miss a field goal, and then get fouled, which is nice if you're shooting over 50%. He historically has hovered around the 50%. His worst season, he shot around like 30-something. That's awful. This season, I think he's high 50s, maybe 60s. It's not good. Iowa State's free throw shooting is what is going to shoot them in the foot in these close games that they play. I think Iowa State got very lucky towards the end of this game with the, I thought a very up and down, I thought it could have a 50-50 flagger at one call on, I forget who the player is. I'm sure somebody can call it out. 50-50 on that flagrant call. But then to tee up Bill Self too, I thought that was a little much. Sure, he was getting animated, but I mean, unless he'd been doing something else during the game and like gotten a warning and for some reason said something to the ref, it could just kind of felt like it's just so unnecessary. I've seen coaches do that all the time. You get a flagrant, the coach is never going to be like, oh, good call. Yeah, like our player deserved a flagrant one there. No, because for a flagrant one, something has to be intentional, not on the ball. And I just thought that was a bad call, really bad call towards the end of the game. Only winning by 4 points, I think that kind of swings it. But one of the – there was that last-second three at the end. It makes it look – it was a close game that makes it look closer. I think those are always a given in those situations. For some reason, it just seems when teams are ever just down and it's not the shot to win the game, just a shot to kind of even the playing field, teams are always making those shots for some reason. There's got to be like a psychological look people can do where it's just – people just are feeling themselves in that moment, in that position where they just have to make the three, but that's neither here nor there.
Right.
Keyshawn Gilbert, Robert Jones, Milan, and the play of Tame and Lipsy have elevated this Iowa State team to something special. I think number three overall in KenPom seems drastically overrated, but I think it's also – I think it's one thing to measure a team based off units and numbers and then another thing to actually look at the team and play. The two things don't always look like they translate together. What I'm saying is the number three defensive ranking versus how I actually see them play. But I guess the numbers don't lie. So those are our thoughts on Iowa State. But I've been following Kansas this year, probably not as much as I usually do, but fairly well because they are the top honcho in the Big 12. And so I want to hear Aaron's thoughts. Kind of same question I just gave Clark. Just up to this point, like state of KU – who are some new faces you really like? Where do you see the trajectory of this team going? Clark said Final Four for Iowa State, so fuck. And then, yeah, just overall thoughts on KU. Anything you want to say about him?
Yeah, so what I will say is I think this KU team is good. I think they're a good team, and, you know, the patented Bill Self formula to every season is – you know, good non-conference, you play well, normally have some hiccups in January right about this time, and then rip off 9 out of 12 or 9 out of 11 Big 12 wins. With that being said, looking forward at their upcoming schedule, it is a fucking gauntlet. I think so the only cupcake in the next 10 games, in theory cupcake, is Oklahoma State at home tomorrow night. And then they've got, like, Houston at home, Baylor at home, and then I think they go on the road to play K-State. And then, you know, I think out of their next 10 games, 7 of them are currently ranked.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of – I'm in a weird place right now because normally they get over that hump, like West Virginia and Iowa State. Probably 8 times out of 10 in the last 10 years, they – find a way to win those games where teams go nuclear on them a little bit. And so they're kind of in the hole a little bit more so now than they are typically. And I think the schedule's harder. You got better teams. We got to play Houston twice, have to play Baylor twice. Don't get a rematch against Iowa State, which I would feel good about. You know, I think Kansas always does really well in their bounce back games against a team they lost to earlier in the conference play. You know, I think best case scenario, they probably go, how many games are we in right now? 7. So I'd say they go 9 out of 11 and either tie or win the Big 12 at 13-5. Worst case scenario, I think it's absolutely feasible that this team does not win a road game for the rest of the conference slate. like if things don't go right and kind of, I mean, we played at UCF, at West Virginia. Those were two of the ones we needed to pick up. But with that being said, conference play can go how it goes. It's going to be a shit show, chaos. I think everybody's going to beat the shit out of each other, more so this year than even in years past where it's been a tough conference schedule. With all that being said, I think this team is very good. I think they're going to get better on defense, which should be scary for everybody else because they're going to stay at least where they're at on offense, if not get better. And I think they've got a starting five that can hang with anybody in the country. And I think they've got some role players that still need to develop. A couple freshmen's and a new guy. So two transfers, two fifth-year transfers, and then two freshmen. I'd say at least half of those guys figure their shit out late in the season where they start contributing positive minutes on a regular basis and giving guys a spell. Because that's been one of the biggest issues so far is almost zero bench production. Especially with Furphy in the starting lineup now. I think in the last two games we've had four total points from our bench, with two of those being free throws. So,
which I was seeing something recently where Kansas typically doesn't have production from their bench, just kind of the way Bill Self goes. You know, he's going to put five guys out that won't have the stamina through his coaching, I'm sure. And then, they're going to be able to play a game from start to finish. Yes, with, I'm sure, bench players going in and out. But is this year more of a stark contrast, I guess, to the past seasons where there really isn't a go-to six man?
Yes and no. I mean, I would say yes, we don't have a established six man, but we've seen two different guys and hopefully the third. I'm really hoping Nick Timberlake, you know, starts to figure it out, because that guy can score, you know? Like, you know he can score. If that guy
can put up... And is he the other fifth-year senior? Or...
Yeah, he's a Towson transfer. He plays above the rim, you know? Okay. And he's actually looked pretty good. The first, like, 8 or 9 games of the season, it was like, oh, gosh. Here in the last few games, he's looked good in limited minutes, I think. We don't have a defined sixth man. In the past, we might have had a sixth man, but it wasn't necessarily we needed offensive production at that point. Like the national championship team, I think KJ Adams may have been our sixth man.
He was at the time.
And like
crazy to think about.
Lightfoot, you know, like they were more so there to maintain the status quo while giving some of these key guys a spell. Like, go play some good fucking defense. You know, play above the rim, alley-oops, and pass the ball well, rebound the ball well. Like, that's your job. I think something like that is all – we don't necessarily just need that this year. I think KU's margin for error is less than it has been in the past, with the fact that they're not that much better than anybody, and they're also – everybody else is better on average. If somebody can develop into a 3-point threat, like this Kansas team goes from like a good team to very quickly scary. You got, you know, 5 to 12 minutes a game from somebody who can shoot at any point. And I'm thinking Nick Timberlake and one of the freshman guards, it can get scary quick.
I completely agree. I mean, just based off your starting five, which did not know Furphy made his way into that role. That's pretty impressive, especially as a freshman, I believe he is. So you're talking about El Marco Jackson Jr. or Nick Timberlake probably stepping up. I don't see a world where one of those two guys don't, honestly. Mm-hmm. It just wouldn't make – it doesn't compute in my brain at all that doesn't happen. So one of the two, at least, you know, best case both, but I see one of the two making that leap. Getting that production for Kansas. I think this is just the typical Kansas this time of year narrative where we start just talking about the fun subject of, hey, somebody else might win. That's pretty fucking crazy, isn't it? And they're only a game and a half back from first place. not even midway through the season. So there's still a lot to play. I think Kansas gets it done, at least gets a share. If not, I don't think that's a bad season by them. I think that speaks more to a chaotic clusterfuck of a year for the Big 12. You know, bringing in these new teams, going away from the home and home. There's a lot of change going on. Bill Self's touched on that. But with guys like Hunter Dickinson, sometimes I watch him play and I'm like, what are you even doing out there? Like, he doesn't look like he's bringing anything to the team. He looks absolutely awful. And then I just get completely humbled by going and looking at his box score. And he's regularly putting up a double-double, like 20 and 15 every game. It's absolutely ridiculous that that's not being talked about as much. He'd probably be player of the year candidate up there with Terrence Shannon Jr. if he played a full season for a player of the year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with Zach Edey, all bets are off the table. I mean, that man's a lock. That man is pissed the fuck off after last year. So he's doing crazy things. And I love, as much as Hunter Dickinson's a fun guy to put the villain douchebag title, he's only seemed like a good guy at KU. Bill Self has great things to say. I've seen some of his interviews. It just kind of seems like he embraces the role and he really fuels off that hate. Like, he's one of those guys where if you get that student section chant going, like, you're overrated, you'll never see any time in the NBA, whatever they have to say, he'll immediately rise up for that. And it's like, you poked the wrong bear there. That's not the bear you want to poke. But then with two of the, I think, best, it feels crazy to call them role players in the NCAA, KJ Adams Jr. and Kevin, is it Jr.? Are there two juniors, yep. KJ Adams Jr. Yeah, and Kevin McCullough Jr.?
Yep.
That's hilarious. Those two guys are, when they're on, KU's untouchable, I think. You just, mm-hmm. you can't have three guys, and that's just not including Dwan Harris.
They go as far as Dwan Harris takes them.
Yep. If Dwan Harris gets a little bit more aggressive, that's a great point you bring up, Clark, because that's it. You know, like, yeah. Obviously your point guard's going to lead you to victory or defeat, most likely one way or the other. Dwan's been timid at points, but then he'll drop 25 against a great Kentucky team playing their ass off, you know? And that's part of the frustrating aspect as like a fan. You're just like, dude, that's a wide open shot. Just take it, you know? And he won't, because he likes to break down defenses. And not that that's not like a broken down play, but he just doesn't shoot shots all the time willingly unless it's needed. As you guys saw, like, there's a late shot clock play against Iowa State where he just, you know, he realized the situation and put it up and hit it. But God, I want him taking 8 to 10 shots a game, I think.
And I think Bill Self does too. Yeah. I think everybody's saying that to him, which confuses me, because I don't get why he doesn't. I guess I don't know Dwan Harris as well, but I've watched him play for as many years as he's been at KU, and he's just a great story. This just undersized guard doesn't look like he should be good at this, doesn't look like he should be good at that. Namely, I'm saying defense and shooting. I guess everything. He doesn't look like he should be a good basketball player, but he is one of the most game-changing on the floor. I feel like I could say that about a lot of KU's starting five, namely Kevin, KJ Adams, who is a real game-changer, and then Dwan too. I mean, you said it. I think if we're looking at the Big 12, KU has the best starting five on paper, and then next is Baylor in my book, I think. But I think it's a drop-off. KU's got the experience. They're coming in hot and heavy all the time, every year. And I think we're touching on it. I think it's something where my stance is I see KU continuing to trend up. Even after a loss at Iowa State, I see them continuing to trend up and finishing off the season strong. But what would be fun, if somebody knows a stat on this, when KU doesn't win the Big 12 – I wonder how well they do in the NCAA tournament. I wonder if that's a little more ignited fuel for the fire. You know, they lose that, and then so it's like, okay, well, we feel the fire under our seats a little more. Let's get up and let's start punching people in the face, metaphorically, not purposely.
I could be wrong, but we might have made the Final Four and lost to Villanova the year we did not. It was one of those years right around that time. I can't remember if it was that year or the year before, but – We either
it's only 1 year you guys haven't won. You've tied or won every other year.
Yeah, of the last like 16 or 18 ish, it's tied or won. I think we lost 1 year. We've tied a handful, four-ish, maybe shared title with, but yeah, for the most part. I mean, they ripped off 14 straight there after, I think, Bill Self, his first year they got second, maybe, and then ripped off 14 straight, and then lost the 15. Ridiculous. And then I think tied or shared, or tied or won the next two or three.
What's going on with Bill Self? I thought he almost like died last year, and then he stepped out of that tunnel and looked 15 years younger on Saturday.
Yep. Oh, man. So,
they brought in a clone.
He had a heart event, but he did not have a heart attack. It was like a murmur or something, and then they caught it ahead of the actual attack point. So that's why he sat out of the tournament. I think he had like a double or triple bypass, something like that. Some heart surgery, you know. I've noticed it just in his off sideline demeanor throughout the season. He's a lot more relaxed. I mean, Iowa State, I think, was actually probably one of the more livid and animated he's been all season. He definitely looks – I was having this conversation at a birthday party the other night. People were asking if he was on, like, Ozempic. I was like, no, he had a heart attack. Like, he lost weight as a result of, you know, his heart. But, he definitely – he looks healthier.
It seems like he took that really well. But
you see the side-by-side, and you're like,
oh. Abandoned his team in March.
Yeah.
He had to.
Fucking – to allude to the dude who took off his shirt, that Arkansas team, that was the worst – that a little – tangent, but that was the worst basketball game I've ever seen in my life. There were like 56 free throw shot. The dude, Eric Musselman, took off his shirt and celebrated on the table, only get to lose by 40 to UConn the next week.
Dude, the Mus Bus is a different man in the NCAA tournament, but they might not even make the tournament this year, Arkansas, but not getting into that right now. I was listening to I'll plug John Rothstein here, listening to his podcast with Bill Self, and they were kind of getting into that. He touched on the March Madness absence, his health. And I thought it was funny the way Rothstein was kind of tiptoeing around the whole, like, you had a heart attack or a heart murmur, you had heart issues. He just kept saying like your absence, and it was touching on some of the games in March, and Bill just kept saying like, I was dealing with like heart issues. So I was not watching March Madness last year. You know, what happened. And since then, it kind of seems like he's found this new lease. He's attached himself to this idea of like a new lease on life, where it looks like he's having more fun. He's obviously looking better as an individual health-wise. And then, I don't know, when he's talking about things, it just, everything seems a little more lighthearted. They had a cop doing the juicy wiggle at the halftime show.
Yeah, I didn't love that.
Bill Self was just sitting there smiling, big grin on his face. Like, no coach would do that, I don't think. Osselberger, none of the John Shireman, like none of the good coaches that people hold up as like, these are good dudes, you'd be finding that video of them, you know, smiling, enjoying a halftime, just at an opposing arena. So I thought that was fun news. That's fun college basketball news that people like to see. So I'm here for this new Bill Self. Obviously it's fuck chalk. Is that a thing? Obviously it's not rock chalk when Iowa State and KU are playing, but regardless of their success, wish them the best all the time. I know I'm probably one of the few Iowa State fans that feel this way. Clark hates Mitch Lightfoot, hates Kansas in general. So yeah. I guess I'm happy for the man's health is where I'm coming. And I hope we get to see him in March because he's always a treat in March. One of the few.
One of the few. Always a treat. We'll get to some more games here. I do want to shout out Texas Tech. Mm-hmm. Like we always talk about, third coach in 4 or 5 years, and they just continue to bring it. I don't know what's going on in Lubbock. I know they love to party in Lubbock, but they just continue to have competitive basketball teams. Almost like it's the guys in the guys there, not the coaches. Might be one of those schools where they just get dudes.
It's like what Jerome Tang wanted. We just want dudes here.
Right. And they got They got, picked up a big one this weekend. Like, just a fun team. So shout out Texas Tech.
Clark, do you see that success continuing, though? They're first in the Big 12 by half a game right now. You think they continue with that and finish, I don't know, top two, top three?
I think top five, top six in the Big 12 this year is going to be top 20 in the nation. So I think they end up in that range.
Fair. Okay.
And you can go a step further.
They play TCU tomorrow. Or who have they played?
Yeah, because they beat, what, Oklahoma on Saturday?
Yep.
Beat Oklahoma at Oklahoma.
Kansas. I'm not sure if they played Baylor or Iowa State or Houston, for that matter.
They played Houston and they lost.
They beat Houston. Lost to Houston, yeah.
Blown out by Houston.
Beat Texas, who I still think Texas is coming. Dylan Dessou.
They're going to be hit or miss. Yeah, they are due. They got the talent.
They're coming.
Yep.
It's going to be an interesting next month and a half.
Yep.
It's going to be exhausting.
Hey, do you guys want to go to Kansas City for the tournament?
Sounds the fun. The Big 12 tournament? Yeah. Oh, fuck
yeah. We might have to be boots on the ground for that one.
We'll have to be boots on the ground for that.
Berg, Memphis lost to UAB yesterday. Thoughts?
Well, Memphis is on a three-game losing streak, and the guy, Javon Quinterly, I mean, just that whole fun team that I've been telling you to watch in March, they are probably on the outside looking in right now. You can't have three losses in the American back-to-back-to-back.
Without Houston.
Yeah, exactly, without Houston. And they still – I think it will be very beneficial that they get to play – who the fuck is that? Florida. They get to play Florida Atlantic twice at the end of the season. It's like their last three games, two of them are a home-and-home with FAU. So, I mean, shit, just figure it out, and we can overlook this three-game losing stretch that they've gone on. But there's no excuse. I haven't been watching the games because that's sorry as fuck. You got to earn my attention, and they have not been doing that. And it almost even makes their games that they're winning close, the like last second three to steal the game from Javon Quinterly that happened like three times in a row. Kind of makes you question those more, like that you really shouldn't be losing to teams like this. They're one of the most experienced teams in all of college basketball. So it's disappointing. I just hope we get to see them in March because I think if they make it, you know, last year they were first round exit to FAU, but I think it'll be fun to see. I think they'd have something to say in the tournament.
Absolutely. Missouri Valley Conference corner, safe space.
Oh, here we go.
Drake did what they needed to do. Double digit win against UNI. Not really sure what happened to the Cats. My sources are blaming Cole Henry for the loss. They lost by 14. Mm. Tucker DeFreeze.
Well, that's a big loss.
Tucker DeFreeze playing like a top 10 player in the country.
14-point loss is a lot to put on one guy. But fuck it. I guess he deserves it.
Yeah. So we'll put it on that. And then my boy Kenny T, that works at the local YMCA, Bradley alum. They got beat by Indiana State in double overtime. I told him I'd discuss it. I'd shout it out on here. He loves his Bradley team. And so just giving them a shout out too. They'll be back. That Missouri Valley's fun. It's a fun conference. They got three or four teams.
Gotta love the Mo Val.
Come on.
Oh yeah, Bradley's pretty good. Pretty good
in the tournament. I mean,
conference.
I
think so. I think there's just too many good teams across the Power Five, Power Six now.
So you think they only get the one bid, and do you think it's only from the tournament winner?
I think so. So I think it's probably Drake, Bradley, or Indiana State.
God, and what do they call that too? It's something Arch City?
Arch Madness.
Something like
Arch Madness.
Arch Madness. Yeah, love. That's such a good name. Honestly, Missouri Valley, they got it going on. You're right.
Did you guys have a buddy in school that was probably like a big UNI guy and would always go to Arch Madness? We always had one of those.
I think I'm better for not having that guy though. I don't want to be close friends with that guy. Unless it's you, Clark. Otherwise, I don't want to be close friends with that guy.
It's not me. I can confirm it's not me. But okay, so both of you looking ahead. I know there's some good games. I know we hinted at it earlier. Which ones you guys must see? What's the must see TV this week for you?
Houston at KU. Come on. Yeah. Obvious for me.
Is that 8? That's 8 versus 4?
Yep, that sounds right. Yeah.
That'll be must see.
Do you want to hear something crazy?
Yeah.
KU was more likely to win at Iowa State than they are apparently to win against Houston at home this weekend, which blows my mind. Just as a KU fan my entire life, I don't think I've ever seen it.
I saw that, a little confused by that, but I don't think I'm as familiar with Houston's arena, wherever, whatever that
is. We're playing at home. We're playing at Allen Fieldhouse.
Oh, what? I'm even more confused now.
Yeah, right?
Okay.
Advanced Metrics love Houston. I get that. You know, they're like top eight offense, top one. Are they first in defense or top three at least?
They are still first.
So, I mean, I get that aspect of it. And I understand that KU doesn't grade well right now, which is fair.
So they play Texas tonight at 7. Houston does. That should be a blowout Houston's way, but guys, I'm not in on this Texas team at all.
Texas is upset them. I'm calling it now.
That's what I could see, but do you really want them coming off a loss? I know.
Not at all.
That would scare me.
I want them to win. I want both teams to win. I want Houston, you know, not having a chip on their shoulder coming in Saturday. If KU only has a 22% chance to win, I want all the dice in my favor for that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Who knows? They still could have their road woes. I mean, looking at it, they lost their first two road games to Iowa State and TCU. They beat Texas Tech at their home. They beat UCF at their home. They beat Kansas State at their home. And then they beat a BYU team on the road who is honestly pretty vulnerable if they're not hitting their threes, and they weren't that day. I think, honestly, Houston might have shot more and better from the three that day. Very weird, but I'm still not sold that they can play on the road as efficiently as people I think are giving that to them now after a four-game win streak.
So a lot of people are just chalking these guys up as a great team.
And they are.
Don't get me wrong. They are. But, you know, the Big 12 is a shit show for every year for a reason. Like, the team that wins it every year is the team that manages to steal three or four on the road. That's it.
Yep.
Like, because most teams are going to lose – at most, maybe two games at home. Any contender in the league is going to lose at most two games, and then they'll steal a few. Like, and I
even
feel
then, you lose more than one, kind of in an iffy spot, I think, at home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. I would agree with that 100%. That'll be an interesting game. I love Houston's backcourt, but
I'm scared of their backcourt. Their backcourt's fucking nice. They're very.
Yeah, they're great.
Dewan Harris is going to have to be hitting his little mid-range floaters inside, like right around the free throw line. If that shot's him and KJ Adams, that's my X factor, just pre-X factor. If those two are hitting floaters in the middle of their kind of pressure man that they do, that's the difference in the game, I think.
I feel like against Houston, it's containing the perimeter, and then if you can contain Jamal Shedd, then you're pretty good. Because LJ Cryer is pretty on and off, but, like, honestly, for the most part, I think he's still shooting around 40% from three, so can't really take that away from him. But you lock down Jamal Shedd, I feel like you're in a good spot against Houston.
Yeah, they're both going to get theirs, you know, just make them shoot it.
Right.
In doing so. As long as LJ Cryer doesn't come out and hit, like, four of his first five threes, you know, he's got the experience. He's been there, you know, a handful of times already. And honestly, I feel like he will probably come out playing nice, but I'm fingers crossed, optimist here.
He'll get up for the game. That should be a good one. I'd be surprised if that was a blowout either way. That kind of seems whoever's getting the plus points, if you're a betting man, take that. Not saying they'll win, but because it could be like a 3-point game. Could be like 72-69 KU or Houston.
I mean, we're not going to be favored. It's going to be, you're going to have beginning of the game plus money for KU, which
If that happens, blow my mind.
But I don't bet on Kansas, but, you know, it's like, I don't know. I just don't know that I've ever seen Kansas walk into a game at home and be underdogs. Like, literally in my entire life. I don't know that it's happened.
It does feel wrong.
All right, what other games do we got, Clark? We got some good ones.
We got some great ones. I would bring that one. It's an exciting one, but there's better games that day.
Are there?
You got what? Yep. Chapel Hill?
We got North Carolina Duke in Chapel Hill.
At Chapel, yeah, cool. That's like game day, right?
Yeah, and this North Carolina team, this is the team we thought we were getting last year. We're getting them this year.
Yep. The whole triangle, the RJ Davis.
Yep.
Armando Bacot.
Yep.
Got one
love triangle. Absolutely.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, RJ Davis is an absolute force. I need to watch more North Carolina games just to see him put up like 30 plus points.
It's basically the same team that KU beat in the national championship. Like the starting five, like three of the five, I think.
Yeah, Armando Bacot just refuses to leave.
Yeah,
which I get it. I guess getting paid to be in college.
Yeah, plus you go to North Carolina where you are a god, I'm sure, on campus.
Yeah, 100%. Who do you guys like in that one? Do you guys have instant reactions, thoughts?
I think North Carolina. I take age over beauty all day.
Love that.
This one feels like an obvious UNC pick, which is why, yeah, I think they win. It feels like an upset spot for no reason. North Carolina cannot go in the ACC undefeated. I'm just counting down. Like every game I see now, it's like they got to lose this. They got to lose this. But they keep winning. So I'm putting this game as the game they lose. Otherwise, who else is beating them otherwise?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe they do go undefeated. I just refuse to believe it. That's crazy. So I'll take Duke, but UNC for the longevity and doing better in March. Fuck Duke.
Fuck Duke. I love that. Tennessee goes to Kentucky.
Oh, love that. That's going to be a hell of a game.
Kentucky's got to get theirs. They got to get theirs.
Kentucky's got a same. I think same thing. I'm going Tennessee again. The age.
Ooh.
That wisdom.
On the road.
Taking on the road.
Age on the road. I love that.
In Rupp Arena.
In Rupp Arena. Damn. You know, Tennessee or Kentucky is super, super fun. Like unbeatable when they're on. You know, who's their guard? I can't remember.
Which one? Reed Shepard?
Yeah.
Rod Dillingham.
Another guy. Maybe number four. Hey,
another cold white boy.
Yeah, they got Reed another Shepard? Guy. They're just, you know, if they're on, you're not going to beat them. You know, if they're hitting those threes, they can. And if they're obviously they're going to be more athletic than any team they most likely face outside of Duke and a couple SEC teams maybe. You know, if they're playing that game, obviously Kentucky's going to win it. But I think Tennessee, with how defensive they are with Rick Barnes, right?
Mm-hmm.
How defensive minded they are. Like, I think as long as you disrupt them and they're not hitting these kind of late shot clock hit, you know, shots to rile the crowd up and boost energy, I think Tennessee takes it.
Takeaway like don't connect, and I feel a lot better about Kentucky winning. They play South Carolina and Kentucky this week. If they beat South Carolina, I feel a lot better about a Kentucky win. If they lose to South Carolina, I don't see them dropping two games. So,
Take Dalton Connect away, their best player.
Yeah, right. Like, take away their best player, and like you got them.
And I like the other team's chances a lot.
if only it was that simple.
Unfortunately, to our eyes this weekend, Iowa State plays at Baylor. I don't know if you guys have seen Baylor's god awful camera angle. They built a beautiful, beautiful new arena and then finished it up and said, oh fuck, where do we put the cameras at? And they chose the very top. I think someone should lose their job over that.
Yeah, you gotta
possibly
think
their life.
The architect did not have that one in the vision. Like, oh wait. This was supposed to be picturesque from a broadcast view. Fuck.
I mean, that is, it's nauseating to watch.
Isn't it all like top down?
You're just looking straight down. It's nauseating. If people were,
I gotta say, I was just watching the game this weekend against TCU. I didn't notice it as much, but now that you called it out, I probably won't be able to get out of my head.
I'm happy I could ruin that viewing experience for you in that moment. I feel a little bad, but not terrible about it.
Just
that's one I see.
So, and I don't know, the Clones, that feels like a trap game for the Clones.
I wouldn't even call it a trap game. That just feels like one where the Clones lose.
Does Iowa State have a bye, though? Not a bye, I should say.
We do. We don't play until Saturday.
We don't play Saturday. I think that is huge for them.
Yeah, we need some rest.
It could go both ways because they're coming off the high of KU, you know.
And a good winning streak.
Sometimes that can kill your legs. You have that quick, you know, Saturday to Monday or Tuesday turnaround in your shot because you gave it your all. But, you know, other times it's like, oh, we just started playing our best ball. Would love to keep playing that. So, I guess I could go either way. But doesn't Iowa State normally have Baylor's number?
I'd like to think so. This just feels like a different year.
It does a little bit.
I mean, so, I like Baylor's team.
I'm going to call out Iowa State is Baylor's trap game.
On this last game they were playing, it was, I guess, if you watch the game at all, they were all wearing other names on their back. I didn't understand the story behind that for a while. I forgot about the so-dubbed Immortal 10. Just a Baylor team in the 60s or 70s, maybe later, I forget, that they all died in a tragic car crash on the road. And so they honored them at the game by having their numbers on the, or names and numbers on the back. Was so confused watching the announcers call Jacoby Walter hitting a three, and then to see a completely different name on the guy's back. I thought I was losing my brain for a little bit. But Baylor, losers of three, playing UCF this Wednesday. And then getting Iowa State at home. That's just a tough spot to be in for them. I'd like to say Iowa State wins, but it can't all go our way, can it? It can't all go Iowa State's way.
Oh, no. It can. Come on, don't.
No, we've been
asking. We're not used to that.
Strive for greatness. It's attainable. Go break some hearts. Strive
for greatness. Shout out LeBron James. Shout out LeBron James, strive for greatness. I watched Trainwreck today. You guys know that movie with Amy Schumer? And LeBron and Bill Hader.
Oh,
Was in that.
I tried not to watch any movie that Amy Schumer's in.
Listen, it's a masterclass by LeBron and Bill Hader. Who the fuck was like, let's cast Amy Schumer as the lead in this romantic comedy? I mean, they made multiple comments about her looking like a man within the script of the movie.
That's just good.
What's that about? Infuriating.
That's tough. Infuriating. You know, I don't think they'd do that if they made the movie in today's age. Amy Schumer had a little moment where she was just doing well in the box office, I think. Otherwise, I don't know why else they keep putting her out.
Why did she have such a moment? She comes off as a very unlikable person.
I think this was probably during a good, you know, go women, which a message I stand for. You know, just right. they were transitioning a different looking woman in front of the camera, and people appreciated that at the time. I don't think she's aged well. I don't watch anything with her in it.
It feels like
initially because it was like a novel sense of humor, and then it was something that got so old so fast.
So fast. I'm done with her.
Through that phase where it was like, let's be inclusive of everyone. And then everyone was like, maybe not.
Let's throw
Margot Robbie on the TV instead of Amy Schumer in a lead role. Everyone's like, yeah, that fucking tracks. Let's do that. Yeah. And we're better people.
So you're saying they were like, they wanted to go back. They're like, we tried to get away from the whole typical Hollywood image, but why?
Why did we do that?
Know who you are.
The Hollywood know who image you has are. Sold for 100 years. Why would it stop now?
Yeah.
Well, I think their hand was forced.
Yeah, probably so. But you know what? Yeah. Maybe that was what we needed.
You don't appreciate what you have until it's gone briefly, and then it comes back, and you're like, okay.
And then it's like, okay, yeah, this is what we needed. My only other game I'm really looking forward to, Drake travels to Indiana State, big Missouri Valley Conference implications on the line.
Yeah.
Oh, that might decide the winner.
Can you break down the top few?
Indiana State's 9-1, Drake's 8-2 in conference play, 18-3 and 17-4. Actually, that might be one where they both get it.
Yeah. Like if they're the two championship matches, like, in the Valley.
Or even like one wins the season, one wins the tournament. Or I don't know. I think it's hard to keep out a team that goes, shit, say they go 25 and 4. Like, it's hard to keep people out at that level.
Mm-hmm.
In good consciences. So I think I can see that happening. But that's a fun game this weekend. A little non-traditional for people out there.
Tune in.
Some grit.
Indiana State, if they win this week, they'll be going on a 6-game win streak. So that's pretty fun. They'll be playing at home. A lot on the line for them. I like Drake in the spot. Might be a little biased, but let's go Tucker.
Yeah.
Degrees.
Let's go Tucker.
Hear that. What about, isn't Wisconsin, number 6 Wisconsin, playing a top 15 matchup? I can't remember
who they're playing.
I know they go to West.
In the Big Ten, Nebraska, who would they be playing?
They go to Nebraska, and I think that might seem like a trap game. Saturday. But it's
or maybe that's Sunday.
They do play Sunday. They do play Sunday. Purdue goes to Madison.
There we go. 2 versus 6.
Hell yeah.
We got 4 top 10 matchups this week. We got 8 versus 2. 9 or whatever North Carolina is versus Duke. Wisco versus Purdue. What's the other one? Or is there only 3? Maybe I'm miscounting. But that's a hell of a slate.
Yeah, you're right. You say Kentucky, Tennessee?
No, I forgot about that one. Yeah.
Yep.
Half the 80% of the top 10s playing each other this weekend. That's phenomenal.
You don't get that.
St. Mary's plays Gonzaga. Anymore. Your St. Mary's have a lot to prove.
St. Mary's still kicking.
Here.
Still kicking.
Yeah, they are. We haven't talked about Ryan Nembhard in a while for a reason. Who, Zaga? Gonzaga?
They don't suck. They by no means suck.
Are we talking Gonzaga or St. Mary's?
He's talking Gonzaga. 15-5, second in the West Coast Conference.
I almost feel like the flip has been script on what I was saying earlier in the year, and it really belonged – the goodbye St. Mary's really belonged to Zaga all along. I feel like this is – St. Mary's takes it this year. Zaga just hasn't looked that good. Haven't looked that dominant at all, even against the shitty teams they play. Kind of sad because they have a good team. They have fun guys on the team. They're not putting it all together. I don't know what's going on, but this is St. Mary's at Zaga. If St. Mary's wins, I think they're back on the trajectory of getting into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Also, a little Mountain West fun with Colorado and Utah. Colorado's going to Utah. Mountain West has been pretty fun. We're talking about maybe 6 teams getting a bid. I think that's pretty fun. If you haven't seen a New Mexico game, watch New Mexico. They're pretty fun. Some people say they have the best backcourt in the country. We're giving it to Houston. But
yes, until further notice, that's Houston's title to lose. That's their title right now.
Mm-hmm.
Best backcourt in the
country. That's about it. Saturday's loaded.
Saturday's loaded. Aaron, thank you so much for joining us tonight. A pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It's been a blast.
Yes, thank you so much. We'll plan on, hopefully, we can, if the schedule's free, we can get you in here next month, talk about the Big 12 again, see what's changed, and, maybe take a deeper look down the road. Okay. That leads us to March.
And if I may say one more thing before we let the people go. Brock Purdy, second half masterclass last night. Top 5 quarterback in the league right now. Currently has 4 playoff wins. That's double the amount that Dak Prescott has. Double the amount that fraud Lamar Jackson has. I think it's time that everyone takes notice, and Brock Purdy's here. That's really just what I want to convey. Brock Purdy's here.
Deserves it. Deserves his flowers. Come on.
Deserves them. And as an Iowa State fan, no one is more shocked than myself that this is how it played out. But it's been beautiful to witness.
And as we were saying at the beginning of the pod, if you're tired of hearing about the NFL, college football's outplayed you, change your favorite sport, make it college basketball, and tune in to the best conference, the Big 12. If you're not a Big 12 fan, there's the Big East, the SEC. There's everything for you. Tune in, watch these games. I know you're going to be active in March, so why don't you know a little bit about what you're talking about in March? With that being said, if Aaron, you have any closing words, Clark, if you have any closing words, send us off.
I've said my piece. I'll continue to regurgitate it over the next 2 weeks, so everyone be prepped for that. But thank you everyone for joining us for our 22nd episode, and we'll see you next week after this great slate of games.
Boom. And that's where we get the music.